Now let me react to this, because as we said, reality check, yeah? Let's try to be real. I think as much as I share this vision, or as much as I would like to see this come true, one thing is, like, you know, isn't it like people have this kind of inertia? There is this idea, oh, if I can buy my ADSL for 15 euro a month, why should I do a community network where I have to do really awkward things like talk to my neighbor? I don't know, maybe Americans are doing that, but like, particularly in London, in London, nobody talks to the neighbor. They don't even greet, or they don't even nod, or, you know, that's the rule kind of thing. So,
well, that's because you live in Hackney.
Society has become so atomized. That's the general kind of thing, that we live as kind of single atoms or single families, and it's really totally difficult to create this kind of, you know, oh, this sacred community spirit. I mean, where should that come from?
May I quickly respond a couple of thoughts. One of the observations that I've made over the last few years is the comparison of the dislocation of urban life and modern life in general, in terms of not knowing your neighbours, and our communications ability nowadays. And one of the things that is striking about what I see as a transitory step with this no need for licences within a certain transmission power in the ISM band with the wireless LAN things, is that its very restrictions actually forces you to think locally in terms of, if you want to organise a part of a larger cloud and a part of a larger network, to a large degree you are hamstrung by the power regulations that your state and government give you, forcing you to be more reflective on your own environment. In fact, a group in the East End coined a term for this, given that we are now involving this wireless networking with global internet gateways as well, and they termed a phrase, the phrase was go-glocal, this word that's half a mixture of the word global and local. And I sort of I like that idea. I have no idea in the medium future whether this will develop further in terms of true local content and development, but I assume it's at the beginning of a bit of a cohesion in the local sense.
Please come into this discussion with further comments or maybe questions. So maybe take the microphone.
I have a question about the let's say the lawfulness of using free networks. I will explain the problem that we have in Padua, which is a small city near Venice in Italy, where we've been thinking for a long time about building a free network, a free mesh network specifically. The problem is that for the Italian law, you are responsible. I mean, if you want this mesh network to go to the internet, yeah, and not just being an autonomous network, which is very fine but not very useful, at least for me, at some point, some member of this wireless network has to have an access to the internet. In that moment, for the Italian law and for most of the contracts that you do with the Italian internet service providers, you are responsible, yeah, for the traffic that passes through your node. Or at least you are, when you sign the contract, you are saying that you are the person in charge of everything that happens on that node. So I would, as much as I agree that it's the goal is to have a network commons, I would feel a bit uneasy thinking that I am liable for all the traffic that passes through my node, unless there is, I mean, and this is the question, if you had the same problem with your networks, and how, if you did, how you resolve it.
Yeah.
I think
part of the remit of networkcommons.org is to raise and highlight issues like that. In fact, last Sunday we presented in the UK one of the first papers that I know that deals with this issue, and that is the legal aspects of running, owning, operating what we termed open public networks, specifically with wireless networks in mind, specifically also with people who hold individual contracts with ISPs to provide internet gateways into that network. The work is not complete still. It's a work in progress. And at the moment, it's directed towards UK case law, but we will be expanding that more and more internationally as we go, because we fundamentally believe that in order to inform people realistically about not only you must inform them not only about the benefits of collaborative networking and distributed ownership and the sharing, or open declaring of sharing of resources through PICO peering efforts and so on, but you've also got to understand the risks. The risks of the external environment being your legal environment, your RF environment, etc.
So
if you want some sort of further information with this process, please contact, an email contact is info@networkcommons.org, where we plan to be doing more research in this area.
I think Jürgen wants to come in on this from a German perspective.
Yeah, in Germany the situation is very much like yours in Italy, I think. And one way we try to solve that is that we founded a legal club, which is, in Germany it's called Verein, I don't know what it is in Italian.
A non-commercial association.
Yes. And what we are trying now is to distribute a way for people, anyone here within in the room, could like give his money to this legal club, and the club will make the contract to the provider. And this only takes the risk of the people who really do it. But I think it's necessary. It's a necessary way.
Okay. Any further questions? Oh, I see.
I've got a question.
Okay.
I've got a question about the developing countries that have been mentioned here in wireless projects that people have been involved in. And that is, to a large degree, areas, especially developing countries, and especially areas that have been recently affected by terrible strife and war. The telecommunications, in my view, and this is a contentious statement, but telecommunications, in my view, has become one of the final forms of colonization by the first world, of the developed world. Not only in terms of monolithic telecommunications companies that have moved in, but also the second wave that fragments after conflict, and that is medium-sized companies in coming into areas, tabula rasa, and again, establishing infrastructures without actually involving to a real and fundamental degree the people that they're serving. Would anyone who... would perhaps, Thomas, you'd like to comment on aspects of this and how you see this coming and how you see a way to get improvements to this. Perhaps Dwayne too.
I think, I mean, probably and fundamentally one of the ways to deal with it, and I agree with you, this is going on. I think one of the ways to deal with it is, in a sense, enabling and empowering locals to build their own networks again. How do you do that in a place that's been hit by strife and war? I don't really know.
I just want to take a task here, the issue of empowering. I don't think it's a matter of active instruction here. But I think it's a matter of understanding the cultures that you're imposing these technologies onto, and to work from the grassroots level. A lot of other groups that aren't represented here today are doing.
I think one of the things that we're very focused on when we work in the developing countries is that we're not imposing any thought. This is basically about capacity building. It's basically about technology training and showing people what's possible, and about local and regional sort of having projects that can be seen locally and regionally. So one of the powerful things is that if you go to certain parts of Africa and there's a local initiative to establish a wireless network, there's a much greater likelihood that people in neighboring countries will see that initiative than that they will see something like Consume in London and think that it's applicable to their situation, because the situations are much, much more similar. And in that sense, I think whatever work is being done by community groups in the developing world is going to be a great step in the direction that these people will be able to essentially help themselves deal with that problem. Another side of the problem is a purely, I mean, if you're talking about cultural imperialism, often the local the locals don't have the freedom to do these things. So there's policy issues. So if the West comes in and rebuilds a country and at the same time places like lobbies and places laws that make it impossible for local groups to work to build their own networks, then of course that's an issue at a different level.
This is an interesting topic for me. California gigabit aside, most of the work that I'm doing these days involves developing countries for a couple of reasons. One is that I feel the best way to get the regulatory changes I want to see in spectrum policy in the developed world is to make the developing world have technology in place that makes us look like cave people in comparison. So let me sort of flesh that out a bit in that my company's a licensed common carrier in the Kingdom of Tonga in the South Pacific. It's certainly a developing country. And we got there because the Crown Prince basically looked at what we were doing in the Bay Area and thought it was neat and said, bring it to my country. So it's given us an opportunity. This has been going on since 1999. So it's given us an opportunity to take a country with the support of the government and basically bring in more advanced technology than was possible in the developed world. And that we put radios in for Motorola for the first time in Tonga that couldn't be used in the United States, for instance. So you had an instance where people there in Tonga had technology that made us look like cave people. Now, we had to spin it a bit because there's an appropriateness angle in that if you look at developed...